गौर प्रेमानंदे हरि हरि बोल। नमो ओं विष्णु पदाय कृष्ण पृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी निति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य सुतारिणे। श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। हरे कृष्ण। सो डू यू ऑल रिमेम्बर कांक्षा'स सिचुएशन एट नाइट व्हेन ही गॉट टू नो दैट कृष्ण ब्रोक दैट बो एंड एनिहिलेटेड हिज एंटायर आर्मी जस्ट टू ऑफ देम कृष्ण एंड बलराम। And so Kamsa now realized that his death is nearing, but still he didn't want to give it up. He started to plan how to kill Krishna. So he made two main arrangements. One arrangement is that Kamsa had an elephant that was so powerful that this one elephant could deal with 1,000 elephants, war elephants. Elephants are powerful, but the war elephants are trained to be extremely dangerous. They're just trained to fight battles. So this elephant that could deal with 1,000 elephant, his name was Kuvalayapira. Kuvalayapira was placed at the entrance of the arena so that when Krishna and Balaram would come, this elephant would trample them. And then Kamsa arranged that he had some very, very powerful wrestlers headed by Chanur, Mushtika, Shal, Toshal and Kuta. They're extremely powerful. Like as I was telling you, that these demons were so powerful that they could defeat the demigods. Like Bakasura, he was unperturbed even by Brahmastra. Brahmastra is 100 times more powerful than any nuclear weapon. The weapon of Lord Brahma. Can you imagine how powerful that will be? Brahma is the creator and his weapon. This Brahmastra is 1,000 times more powerful than thunder. Indra's Vajra. So we can't even imagine how powerful these individuals were. And so Kamsa made arrangements that these wrestlers would challenge Krishna and Balaram to wrestling bout. And then they would kill Krishna and Balaram. Anyway, in the morning, Krishna woke up and he left for the sacrificial arena. The sacrificial arena was already plundered by him, the wrestling arena. He came and when he was about to enter, he saw this huge elephant blocking the entrance. So Krishna told that elephant keeper, please remove the elephant, ask him to move, let me go in. So the elephant keeper did not comply. He just continued to block the way. So Krishna got very angry. He said, look, if you don't listen to me, then along with your elephant, I'll send you to the abode of Jamaraj. Jamaraj is the demigod who takes care of the living entities after death. So he is actually the controller of death. So hearing that, the elephant keeper became very angry and he provoked the elephant to charge towards Krishna. So when Krishna saw that, he decided to play with the elephant for a while. So elephant charged, Krishna just went at the back of the elephant. And in this way, the elephant started to go round and round and round looking for Krishna. Then at some point, Krishna just went under the belly of the elephant. And then Krishna came in front of the elephant. The elephant tried to charge him. But again Krishna very quickly stood aside, and then the elephant tripped. Then at some point the elephant tried to... Krishna laid on the ground. An angry elephant came to gore Krishna with his tusks. And immediately Krishna got up, and the elephant on the hard ground, it just stuck his tusks. It became even more angry. So then finally they tried to attack Krishna again. But this time Krishna just got the elephant, caught hold of the elephant by its trunk. And along with the Mahu, the elephant keeper, elephant trainer, he just gave it such a strong pull that the elephant slept and fell on its side. And then Krishna just climbed up onto the elephant's tusk and got hold of the tusk of the elephant and pulled it out of his body. And with that tusk, he started to beat the elephant and kill the elephant. Then Balaram took the other tusk. And after killing the elephant, Krishna and Balaram, with the drops of blood that sprayed into Krishna's body, with the tusk, carrying the tusk on their shoulder, they walked into the arena. And seeing that, the saintly people became very excited, very happy, but Kamsa became extremely upset that he couldn't imagine that anybody could kill Kuvalaya Pira. What to speak of these young boys? How old was Krishna at that time? He was about 14 years old. So then, it was this Chanur and Mustika challenged. And they're like two giants. And Krishna and Balaram, two young boys. So people started to protest. What kind of match is this? The wrestling match generally takes place between the equals. But here these little boys are expected to fight against these giants. But they didn't pay any heed. But this person challenged Krishna. Krishna also said, look, we are not a match for you. We are just young boys and you are so big. And your body is like, mountains. And not only height, size-wise, but it's so strong. And we have tender young bodies. So how are we going to fight with you? So Chanura said, no, you look like young boys, but you are not young boys. The way you killed the elephant, that shows that you are not ordinary personalities. So in this way it has been, time and time again, we can see that even the demons unconsciously were declaring that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They're saying that you are extraordinary. You're unparalleled in your strength. You're doing things that nobody else can do. So then they started the wrestling. For a long time they fought. And after that fight, Sometimes, most of the times, these giants were actually attacking Krishna. Chanur was fighting with Krishna and Mushtika was fighting with Balaram. And then they were hitting them so hard. And it looked like Krishna's body would smash into pulp. But Krishna and Balaram was unaffected. Sometimes they were avoiding those attacks, and as a result of that, these wrestlers were getting hurt. Sometimes they charged towards them, and from both two sides they charged to Krishna and Balaram, and Krishna and Balaram just moved out from there, and those wrestlers, they struck each other. In this way, their fighting was going on for a long time. And then finally, Krishna just hit Mushtika, Chanura, so hard that the giant fell dead. The way Krishna killed Chanura was he picked him up and he started to swing him. And through this centrifugal force, his life air left his body. And Balaram hit Mushtika so hard that he fell dead. Then another demon came up. His name was Shal, and Balaram killed him, then Krishna killed other. So in this way, one after another, these wrestlers, finally all these wrestlers attacked them jointly, but then Krishna and Balaram killed them all. So when Kamsa saw that sight, he became extremely upset. He stood up from his seat. And he started to shout that, drive these two boys out of my kingdom. Banish them from my kingdom. And kill Ugrasen, kill Vasudev, kill Vasudev. So in this way, when he started to give orders, then Krishna just jumped onto the dais, the raised platform where Kamsa was sitting, surrounded by all the other kings and noblemen. When Kamsa saw that Krishna was coming, he pulled out his sword and he tried to attack Krishna. But although Krishna was just standing there with bare hands, he just avoided Kamsa striking with the sword, and he hit him so hard that his crown went flying. And along with his crown, the sword went flying, and then the Kshatriyas have long hair, so Krishna grabbed Kamsa by his hair and dragged him into the middle of the arena. Just as a lion drags a dead buffalo. And then right in the middle of the arena, Krishna just started to hit him with his hands. And in this way, Kamsa was killed. The demigods from the heaven started to shower flowers. Gandharvas and Kinnaras started to sing and dance in ecstasy. So in this way, the world became rid of the most terrible demon, Kamsa, who was actually ruling over the world at that time. So after killing Kamsa, Krishna went to the prison where his grandfather Ugrasen was captivated, imprisoned, along with his own father Vasudev. So Krishna released them, and many other family members, those who were imprisoned by Kamsa, Krishna released them all. And then Krishna coronated Ugrasen, Kamsa's father, as the king of Mathura. So in this way, a new chapter began. in Mathura. After there, and Krishna and Balaram were united to their parents again, and father and mother, Vasudev and Devaki, were extremely happy to get their son back and becoming relieved from this anxiety of Kamsa's ruling. So at that time, Krishna and Balaram decided that they would go to study, because it is a custom that the higher class people, especially Brahmins and Kshatriyas, they go to Gurukul, the Guru's ashram, to study. So Krishna and Balaram decided to go to study in the ashram of Sandipani Muni. So they went to Avanti and they stayed there in the Guru's ashram for 64 days and they mastered 64 arts. And these 64 arts actually covers all possible arts. After completing their studies, it is a custom to give dakshina to the guru. You learn from guru, you get trained up and you receive knowledge from the spiritual master, and then you give him something in return. That is called dakshina. So Krishna asked his guru, Sandipani Muni, please tell me what kind of dakshina I can give you. So Sandipani Muni said, look, I don't know. I'm happy just that you came and studied under my tutelage. Anyway, I will go and ask my wife if she would like to have something as dakshina. So Sandipani Muni went to his wife and asked her. So his wife said, look, these two students of yours are not ordinary students. Therefore, let us ask something really extraordinary from them as dakshina. Long time ago, we lost our son. He was drowned in the ocean. So let's ask them to bring our dead son back to life. So Sandipani Muni went and told Krishna that my wife wants that you bring back our dead son to life, who was lost in the ocean long time ago. Krishna said, okay. So along with Balaram, he went to the ocean and asked ocean to give the son back. The presiding deity of the ocean came and said, look, actually the son was killed. He's not drowned, but he was killed by a demon called Sankachura, Panchajanna. And so Krishna then went at the depth of the ocean and he found this demon. And he killed the demon and went inside the body, but there also he couldn't find the son. So then Krishna went to Jamraj, the lord of death. And when he told Jamraj that he wanted that son back, then Jamraj said, yes, I have him in my custody and I'll bring him back to you. So in this way, the dead son of Sandipani Muni was brought back to Sandipani Muni from the abode of Jamraj. Now in the meantime, Kamsa's two wives, who are actually the daughters of a very, very powerful king called Jarasandha, they went back to their father and reported that Kim Krishna has killed their husband, Kamsa. So hearing that, Jarasandha became extremely angry. He said, how dare he kill my son-in-law, who happens to be his relative? Because it is inappropriate to kill one's relative. So, according to their family situation, Kamsa was Krishna's uncle, his mother's brother. So, killing an uncle is extremely undesirable. In this respect, Prabhupada is making the point that this is the nature of these demons. They apply the logic and reason according to their own condition, according to their own convenience. Kamsa killed Devaki's 6 sons when right after their birth. Devaki happens to be Kamsa's sister. So Kamsa killed his own nephews. About that, Jarasandha did not complain. Now, why did he kill his nephews? But when Krishna killed Kamsa, then he is making a big issue out of that. Why did he kill his uncle? So in this way, Prabhupada pointed out the demoniac nature. They just see things according to their own convenience, or they apply reasons according to their own convenience. Anyway, Jarasandha became extremely upset and he decided to annihilate the entire Jadu dynasty, the family where Krishna was born, Jadu dynasty. So Kamsa took 13 Akshavhini soldiers and attacked Mathura. 13 Akshavhini is something like, all together, like they have different types of soldiers. Infantry, those who fight on foot. Then cavalry, those who fight from horses, from the horseback. Those who fight from elephants, those who fight from chariots. So there is a huge number of these five types of warriors, numbering almost 1 million, make an Akshavhini. So Kamsa attacked Krishna, Mathura. Now in Mathura, they didn't have much of an army left. Because Kamsa was the king and he was dead, so all were his followers. Krishna's side, most of them were in the prison and they were hiding in different places. So, but at that time what happened? 2 chariots came from the heavenly planet. One for Krishna, one for Balaram. Krishna's chariot had the flag of Garuda on it. And Balaram's chariot had a tal tree, a palm tree, on it as the insignia. And Krishna and Balaram went out of the city gate to face this huge army with which Jarasandha came to attack. And Krishna and Balaram wiped out the entire army. It sounds unbelievable, right? But is anything impossible for the Supreme Personality of Godhead? That's why He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He can do anything, and this is how, through these wonderful pastimes, He establishes His identity. And now it's up to us to believe it or not. Those who know the Supreme Personality of Godhead is all-powerful, then they accept, yes, He can do it. The personality who can make all these universes float in the space, can't He just wipe out a few thousand or a few million people, no matter how powerful they may be? He doesn't even have to fight with them. Actually, Krishna doesn't even have to fight with anybody. Krishna can just cut the supply of oxygen. Right? And everyone will be dead in no time. He is the one who is supplying oxygen. So He can cut the supply of oxygen. Or He can make the planet go out of the orbit. Then what will happen? He doesn't even have to do that. He can just make the planet stop moving. The earth is moving with a tremendous speed. Where everyone is situated? On the surface of the earth. Now, if the earth stops moving for a moment, what will happen? Everything will collapse. So it is out of His causeless mercy that He plays these pastimes. If things happened in an inconceivable way, then we wouldn't be able to conceive it. We won't be able to comprehend it. We won't be able to understand it. Therefore, Krishna performs His pastime in such a way that we can somehow grasp it. And although it is impossible, we have the option to consider whether it is possible by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to accomplish such things. So this is how, through His pastimes, Krishna actually makes His devotees' faith in Him more and more confirmed. And those who are demoniac, those who don't want to believe that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they will simply say, oh, these are all some fairy tales. So the choice is ours, the option is left open to us, how we want to accept. Whether we are going to accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead or not is entirely up to us. But those who accept, their faith in Krishna increases. Their love for Krishna becomes intensified. So that is why Krishna performs His wonderful pastimes. Now, the entire army of Jarasandha is wiped out. Jarasandha is alone fighting. Then Balaram caught Jarasandha and tied him up with ropes. And he was about to kill him. Then Krishna told Balaram, don't kill him. Let him go. Why Krishna said that? That is another secret. Because Jarasandha was actually Krishna's arrangement to bring all the demons to him. So Jarasandha collected the army, brought army consisting of all the demons, and brought them to Krishna and Balaram to annihilate them. Why did Krishna come? Krishna came to annihilate the demons. So this is Krishna's arrangement. Jarasandha was Krishna's employment agent. He was collecting all the demons, bringing them to Krishna to be slaughtered. And in this way, 17 times Jarasandha attacked Mathura. Being defeated in this way, Jarasandha became so upset that he decided to go to the forest. He decided to give up his kingdom, go to the forest and become a sadhu. But his friends told him, look, you are a warrior. You have been defeated, so what? So you shouldn't give up. A warrior never gives up. So he shouldn't give up. Keep on trying. So Jarasandha again raised an army. Equal, consisting of equal number of soldiers. Akshohini. 13 Akshohini. And in this way, Jarasandha attacked Mathura 17 times. And 17 times he had been defeated. And Krishna let him go. Then, on the 18th time, Narad Muni came to Kalajavana. Kalajavana is a personality who was extremely ferocious and he was invincible to the Jadavas. Jadavas couldn't kill him. So there is a history also about that. Garga Muni, the Kula Guru, the Guru, the spiritual master, family priest of the Jadus, was married to one of the Jadu girls, one of the princesses. And once some of the Jadus were making fun of Garga Muni. And Garga Muni became so insulted that he wanted to take revenge. So he performed great austerity, and as a result of that, Lord Shiva appeared to him and asked him, what do you want? So then Garga Muni said that he wanted someone to create fear in the hearts of the Jadus, so just to take revenge. So Lord Shiva granted him the boon that he would get a son who would accomplish that mission. So Garga Muni, in the womb of a Javana king's queen, a Javana king's wife, produced a child. So that son was actually Kala Javana. He was the extremely powerful and practically invincible. Nobody could kill Kala Javana. He had this blessing. And so Narad Muni, Kala Javana was looking for some proper opponent to fight with. These warriors, they like to fight with a proper match. So Narad Muni went and reported to Kala Javana that Krishna is the right match for him to fight with. So Kala Javana then decided to attack Mathura. And it so happened that two of them, Kala Javana and Jarasandha, both actually decided to attack Mathura. So Krishna considered, he consulted with Balaram that, look, this is the situation. Like, if both of them join from two sides, it'll be difficult for us to deal with them. Well, nothing is difficult for Krishna again. It's a pastimes. So he said the residents of Mathura will be in great danger then. So let us build a city. Jarasandha is attacking this city so many times. So let us build a city that will be safe. And where to build the city? In the middle of the ocean. And practically in no time, Krishna built that city of Dwarka in the middle of the ocean. Another consideration again is it possible to build a city in the middle of the ocean? On the ocean? Huh? If Krishna can flow, make universes float in the space, so what's so difficult for Krishna to build a city in the middle of the ocean? And not only that, he built the city, completed the city, and then at night, he transported, when all the residents of Dwarka were sleeping, they all were transported into Dwarka. And in the morning when they woke up, they found themselves in another place. And they considered that, well, this must be Krishna's arrangement. So they just accepted it. So when Kalajavana attacked, Mathura was empty. So Kalajavana attacked with 30 million soldiers. And not only infantry, mind you, elephants, horses, chariots. And Krishna just walked out of the city gate. And to their great amazement, they found that Krishna didn't have any weapon with him. With just bare hands, without any weapon, Krishna was just walking. Krishna walked through Kalajavana's army. And everyone was dazed. They were completely spellbound. They were just seeing Krishna was watching, walking. So the Kshatriyas are so noble in one way, even the demons, that they would fight in an equal way. Like when Kalajavana saw that Krishna doesn't have any weapon in his hands, he also dropped his weapons. And he thought that he will catch Krishna and take him captive. So Krishna was walking, just gracefully, Krishna is walking, and Kalajavana came to catch Krishna, and he couldn't catch him. Krishna was just one step ahead of him. So Kalajavana started to run. He ran. Krishna is walking, Kalajavana is running, still he cannot catch him. He's at the top speed, he is running. And Krishna is walking. So in this way, now Krishna came into a mountain cave. And he walked into the mountain cave. Kalajavana started to shout, "You are hiding. You are a coward. Come out." Saying that, he also entered into the cave. And he found that somebody is lying on the cave. So thinking that that person was Krishna, he started to kick him. And the person woke up. And as he looked at Kalajavana, Kalajavana was burnt to ashes. Who was that person? His name was Muchukunda. Muchukunda was a great warrior in the Ikshaku dynasty. The dynasty where Ramchandra was born. In that dynasty there was a great king called Mandhata, and Muchukunda was Mandhata's son. At one time, the demigods, being attacked by the demons, felt so weak and unprepared that they approached Muchukunda to fight on their behalf. And Muchukunda was protecting the demigods from the attacks of the demons. And while doing that, he could not sleep for a long, long time. Then eventually, from Lord Shiva and Parvati, Kartikeya was born, who became the general of the demigods. So when Kartikeya appeared, then the demigods wanted Muchukunda to retire. They said, "Well, now we have got a proper general, so thank you very much for protecting us for such a long time. And so now you can retire. And at that time they asked him, can you just ask for any boon that you want? Mujukunda said, look, I don't need any boon or anything. All I want is to sleep now. So, and he said, okay, if you want to give me a boon, then give me the boon that if anybody wakes me up untimely from my sleep, then he'll be burnt to ashes by my glance. So as Krishna knew that, so that's why Krishna led Kalajavana into the cave where Muchukunda was sleeping, and when Muchukunda woke up untimely and looked at Kalajavana, Kalajavana was burnt to ashes. So at that time, Krishna asked Muchukunda, please ask me for any benediction. So Muchukunda, as a pure devotee of the Lord, simply asked that, please allow me to remember you all the time and serve you to the best of my ability. So this is how Kalajavana was taken care of. Then Krishna came and slaughtered the entire army of Kalajavana. And in the meantime, Jarasandha came to attack. And when Jarasandha came to attack, this time Jarasandha came with 23 Akshauhini soldiers. But this time Krishna did not confront Jarasandha, but he ran away from the battlefield. That's why another name of Krishna is Ranchorji. Ranchor. Ran means battle. Chor means ran away. Left the battlefield and ran away. Now for a Kshatriya, it is a great disgrace. When a Kshatriya leaves the battlefield, it is worse than death. But for Krishna, leaving the battlefield became the most glorious thing. So much so that Krishna is worshipped, especially in Gujarat, Krishna is worshipped as Ranchorji, the one who ran away from the battlefield. That is the glory of Krishna. So Krishna ran away from the battlefield and Jarasandha chased him. And Krishna and Balaram ran. They went onto a mountain. This mountain was so high that the rain cloud used to always shower there. That's why the name of the mountain was Pravarshan Mountain. And Krishna and Balaram, Jarasandha thought that this time Krishna, being seeing his vast army, Krishna became afraid and he ran away. So he gave him a chase, he ran after, chased Krishna, and Krishna and Balaram went into the mountain, and Jarasandha couldn't find him, so he thought that maybe they're just hiding somewhere out of my fear. So they set fire into the mountain from all four sides. And Krishna and Balaram just went up on top of the mountain. The whole mountain was burning. The flame reached the top. But before that, Krishna and Balaram jumped from the top of the mountain and landed, had a soft landing. And they just walked into Dwarka. So, in this way, Krishna and Balaram was playing this their wonderful pastimes. And now Krishna was happily spending his time in Dwarka, and in the meantime there was a king who had an extremely beautiful daughter. The name of the king was Bhishmaka. He had 5 sons and 1 daughter. So his daughter's name was Rukmini. So Rukmini was extremely beautiful, and naturally her father was concerned when she came of age, her father was concerned about getting her married. So one day when Narad Muni came to Bhishmaka's palace, Bhishmaka asked Narad Muni, please tell me who is a suitable match, who is going to be, who do you think is the suitable match for my extremely exquisite daughter? And Narad Muni said, I think Krishna is the suitable match for your daughter. And then he started to describe the qualities of Krishna. All the wonderful activities that he enacted. He is so handsome, he is so beautiful, he is so powerful, he is so wise, he is so famous. And yet, he is so detached. So in this way, Narad Muni described the 6 opulences of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because Narad Muni knew that this girl is none other than Lakshmi Devi herself, Mahalakshmi, original Lakshmi Devi. So, so he knew that she has appeared to be united with her eternal Lord and Master, Krishna. So when Narad Muni was talking about Krishna, describing about Krishna to King Bhishmaka, Rukmini happened to hear that. And just by hearing about Krishna from Narad Muni, Rukmini fell in love with Krishna. Rukmini felt that this is the person who I want to marry. So, Bhishmaka was very keen to have his daughter married to Krishna. But Bhishmaka's eldest son, Rukmi, was very close friend of Shishupal, a demon. Like you all remember, in Vaikuntha there are 2 gatekeepers, Joy and Vijay. They were cursed by the 4 Kumaras, and they were meant to be 2 demons opposing the Supreme Personality of Godhead in 3 different ages. In Satyayuga they appeared as Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. In Treta Yuga, they appeared as Ravan and Kumbhakarna. And in Dwapar Yuga, they appeared as Shishupa and Dantavakra. In Satya Yuga, they are demons. These 2 became daityas. In Treta Yuga they became Rakshasas, and in Dwapar Yuga they became 2 Kshatriyas. They were the Kshatriya warriors, born Kshatriya family. Very illustrious family. Shishupal was the son of Damaghosh, a very powerful king, and also very noble king. And related to Krishna also. They are also Krishna's cousin. both Shishupal and Dantavakra. So Rukmi decided that Shishupal is the right match. Yes, from material calculation, he's a very, very exalted personality because he was a great demon. From the material calculation, the demons are considered to be the greatest people. But from the divine calculation, the devotees are considered to be the greatest people. So in this way, they just wanted Rukmi wanted Shishupal to be married to Rukmini. Now, Bhishmaka was not only affectionate towards his eldest son, but he was actually afraid of his eldest son. Because these demoniac individuals can do anything. As an example has already been established. Kamsa imprisoned his father, Ugrasena. And this is how, although they are fathers, but they were afraid of their sons. That if we go against them, then they may do something like what Kamsa did. So that is why Bhishmaka didn't want to go against the arrangement of Rukmi. So he complied, although he wanted Rukmini to be married to Krishna, but he was afraid of his own son when he made a different arrangement that she would be married to Shishupal. So he complied. He tried to reason, but Rukmi gave various other points. He said, look, their family is not that illustrious, not as glorious as our family. And look at it, what happened? They just were running away. Krishna's father was in prison. And Krishna grew up not as a Kshatriya, he grew up as a Vaishya. What a disgrace. So, and then they give various other points also. That Vasudev's complexion is fair. In the family, everybody's complexion is fair. Then how come he is black? they gave other reasons also. That whose son he is, nobody knows. Some say he is Nanda Maharaj's son, some say he is Devaki's son. Like, what's his actual identity? Now, see, these are all facts. Whose son is Krishna? Nobody is Krishna's father. So, anyway, so in this way, they made this demoniac calculation that Krishna is not aristocratic enough. So, offering our sister to Krishna will be a blemish to our family's reputation. So in this way, Rukmi reasoned, and Bhishmaka finally, although he was not so much in agreement with him, but still he had to comply. Now the arrangement was made for the wedding. That Shishupal will be married to Rukmini. The news was sent, and Rukmini was so beautiful that anybody would actually want to marry her, especially the warriors. Because those days in the Vedic culture, the same caste used to get married to the same caste, generally. A Kshatriya's daughter would be married to a Kshatriya. So, finally Rukmini, becoming completely desperate, She felt that I have already given up my heart to Krishna. This heart I can't give to anybody else. So what to do? Like everybody is making the arrangement that I should be married to this Shishupal. But I can't. My heart is already given out to Krishna. So, being completely desperate, she wrote a letter to Krishna and sent a brahmana to carry the letter to Krishna. Now, Vidarbha is in the northern part of India and Dwarka is in the western side of India, westernmost part of India. So the brahmana, but this way we can see, although it's about 1,000 miles distance, he traversed it in just a few hours. The wedding is fixed in 3 days' time before Rukmini sent the letter. So the brahmana arrived in the city of Dwarka. And when the brahmana arrived to Krishna, Krishna actually, this also Prabhupada is pointing out, this is the Vedic culture. Krishna, although he is a prince, a king, he immediately stood up. Although he is the supreme personality of Godhead, he stood up, offered respect to the brahmana, and let the brahmana sit on the throne. And he washed his feet. Krishna washing his feet. This is how Krishna is setting the proper culture. And then Krishna, after treating the brahmana properly, gave him food to eat, and while Rukmini fanned that brahmana, and then Krishna asked what he could do for him, so he presented the letter to Krishna from Rukmini. So, reading the letter, Krishna felt that I have to do something about it. So this is another thing about a Kshatriya. When somebody takes shelter of a Kshatriya, it is the Kshatriya's responsibility to give him or her full protection. So Rukmini offered herself to Krishna. So Krishna had to accept her. So Krishna then called his chariot driver, Daruka, and got his 4 horses, latched onto the chariot, and so then they started. Krishna took the brahmana with him. The next morning they arrived. The brahmana didn't come back. Rukmini, the next day they are going to get married. Rukmini also wrote to Krishna that how he should kidnap her. He said that I will be going to the Ambika temple of Durga Devi for worshipping her before the wedding. At that time you come and kidnap me. In this respect Prabhupada is saying that Rukmini, because she is a princess, she grew up with the proper understanding of diplomacy. So she knew that if Krishna came to claim her, there's going to be a fight. And now if the fight was in the palace, that would be very unpleasant. Because the bloodshed right in the middle of the palace, for her sake, she wanted to avoid that. Therefore, she suggested that Krishna would come and rescue her, kidnap her, when she would go to the temple. And also it will be an open field. At that time, it will be easy for Krishna also to kidnap her. And so, but the thing, the time is approaching for her to go to the temple and Krishna didn't show up. So she was in great anxiety. And right at that time, the Brahmana arrived and gave her the news that Krishna has come. She felt so grateful, so happy. She fell at the feet of the Brahmana. And she wanted to offer him everything that she had. But at that time she didn't have anything. She was wondering, what can I offer to this Brahmana who helped me in such a wonderful way? So all she could offer him is obeisances. At that point, the Brahmana became a little disappointed. He thought that he had accomplished such a difficult task for her, and now she's offering him just obeisances, nothing else. So, but when the Brahmana went to his home, he couldn't find his home. In the small little hutment that he had, he found that in that place is a huge palace. And he was wondering whether he came to a wrong place. But then he saw his wife coming out from the house. Yeah, so this is how Lakshmi Devi bestows her mercy upon the devotees of the Lord. Devotees don't have to expect anything from her. She will offer everything. Now in the meantime, now Rukmini has to go to the temple. So she was going to the temple, surrounded by her mother and other senior members of the family and her friends and a big army surrounding the whole entourage. They are just proceeding towards the temple. She worshipped Durga Devi. And Prabhupada is pointing out that the devotees also worship Devi. The difference is that non-devotees desire material benefit from Durga Devi, whereas a devotee simply wants Krishna. So this is a wonderful example. Rukmini is worshipping Durga Devi, but for what? Not for any material benefit, but to have Krishna as her husband. And so she came out of the temple room after worshipping, surrounded by the relatives, female relatives and soldiers. And in the meantime, Shishupal's party, they suspected that Krishna may come. Krishna may come to claim Rukmini, or they didn't think of claim Rukmini, they thought steal Rukmini. Krishna will come, may come to steal Rukmini, because the word was there that the Krishna was one choice and Krishna will, Krishna may come to claim that, you know, that this person has been offered to me already by her father, but now why some other arrangement is being made. So they were all prepared. All these demoniac kings with the soldiers, they all were prepared. There was, along with them came Jarasandha, Dantavakra, Shalva, they're very, very powerful kings with the army came there to give protection so that Krishna cannot steal Rukmini. So they were, after worshipping, Rukmini is walking back to the palace, and as she was, at one point, she was wondering, where is Krishna? What happened? He's not coming. And she just looked up in the assembly of the princes and the kings, And there she saw, her eyes fell upon this wonderful personality. Although she never seen him before, immediately she could recognize him. Because she was meditating upon him all the time within her heart. And Krishna just smiled at her. And now she is reassured that Krishna is there. So in the meantime, all these princes, just seeing Rukmini's beauty, they lost their senses. They all fainted. So Krishna just walked in, picked her up on his chariot, and he started to drive his chariot. In a slow pace. He was not driving at full speed. And in the meantime, in Mathura, in Dwarka, when Balaram got to know that Krishna left alone, Balaram became worried. So he took the army and he followed. So right there, right at that time, Balaram also appeared with the soldiers. Now Krishna picked up Rukmini and he was driving. And everybody was completely stupefied. They didn't know what to do. Only Jarasandha brought everyone back to their senses. Said, what's happening? He's stealing. And then all these kings and princes, they just came back to their senses. They jumped up and they saw Krishna is taking Rukmini away. So they just all jointly attacked Krishna. So in the meantime, Balaram also came. So Balaram with his army was facing all these kings and Krishna drove away with Rukmini. So Shishupal and his army was defeated. So they all were very upset. Shishupal was in a miserable condition. We can well imagine. The poor guy, he was supposed to get married. And now his bride is stolen. So, and his friends consoled him. He said, look, everything happens by the arrangement of providence. We can see that these people during the Vedic time, even though they were demoniac, they had the right understanding. They had the perfect understanding of karmic principles and the supreme controller and so forth. They were saying everything happens by the arrangement of providence. It was not meant to be. So it has happened. Don't worry, you'll have some other brides to get married to. I mean, her destiny was actually written with Krishna. So just take it on your stride. And in this way, they consoled Shishupal. And in the meantime, the news reached Rukmi's brother, Rukmini's brother, Rukmi. And he was very upset. So he took a vow to defeat Krishna and rescue his sister and bring her back to the palace. And he took a vow that if I can't do that, then I am not going to come back to our capital, which is Kundingram. So Rukmi went and challenged Krishna. And a big fight ensued because they are all Kshatriya warriors. They are very, very powerful individuals. And they fought for a long time. And then Krishna defeated Rukmi. And he was about to chop his head off. Rukmini fell at his feet. Said, my Lord, please don't kill him. He is my brother. And naturally, they had an affectionate relationship. So naturally, Rukmini was very hurt to see her brother in that condition. So at that time, Krishna said, okay, I won't kill him. But Krishna shaved him up. So that this is an indication that he is killed. Meaning if you shave his head, that means you could chop his head. And not only shave his head in patches. Not just one sikha, many sikhas. So that is a very, very grave insult to a kshatriya. So at that time Balaram came there and Balaram chastised Krishna. He said, Krishna, you can't treat your relative like this. After all, he's your brother-in-law. So you can't treat him like that. And in this way, Balaram, in a way, it sounds like Balaram was also, while in one hand he was chastising Krishna, but he was actually making sarcastic remarks towards Rukmi. And then Rukmi did not go back to her, to his kingdom again. Rukmi stayed there, he made a hut, and he spent the rest of his life there. Jai Shri Shri Rukmini Dwarkadhish ki. Rukmini's son was Pradyumna. The firstborn was Pradyumna. Pradyumna is actually Kamdev, Cupid. Kamdev, as you all know, was burnt to ashes by Lord Shiva's glance. How many of you do not know this incident? Or how many of you know the incident? Raise your hand. How many of you do not? Okay, so I'll just briefly describe that episode. You see, Shati, you remember Sati left her body. When Daksha, her father, insulted Lord Shiva, then Sati left her body. So Lord Shiva came and plundered the yajna of Daksha. And then Lord Shiva, actually at that time Lord Shiva was carrying the body of Sati and dancing, a dancing of devastation. The whole universe, whole creation was going to fall apart. So at that time, Lord Vishnu released his chakra and Sati's body was cut into 51 pieces. So those 51 pieces fell in different parts and those are the Tirthas of Devi. 51 places of Devi. And so Devi, so when then Lord Shiva saw that Sati's body was not there, so Lord Shiva then sat down on meditation. And he was completely absorbed in his meditation. Now in the meantime, the demigods were attacked by the demons. And there was the demigods, probably as you remember, like they took shelter of, they asked Muchukunda to fight on their behalf. So that is the time Muchukunda was actually fighting on behalf of the demigods against the demons. So demigods then thought that they needed an appropriate general to organize them to fight against the demons. So they felt that powerful personality can come only from Lord Shiva. If Lord Shiva has a son, then that son will be powerful enough to become their general. Jai Shri Shri Gornitai Ki Jai. Jai Shri Shri Rukmini Dwarkadhish Ki Jai. Jai Shri Shri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maharani Ki Jai. Now you can visibly see the personality who kidnapped Rukmini. And how beautifully they have become united. So, anyway, now Lord Shiva is in a trance. So how to, and they knew that Sati now is born as Parvati, as the daughter of Himalaya. So if they unite, then the son that would be born would be powerful enough to become their general. So Parvati was sent to Lord Shiva to break his meditation. But Lord Shiva was so absorbed in his trance, so lost in his trance, so lost in his Krishna's thinking about Krishna that his external consciousness was completely lost. So then the demigods approached Kamdev. Kamdev is the personality who creates amorous feelings in the hearts. In English it's actually Cupid who generates amorous feelings and lusty desires. Kam means lust, the god of lust. So Kamdev was asked by the demigods to break the meditation of Lord Shiva by shooting his flower arrows. So he said, look, I would not dare to do that. Breaking Lord Shiva's meditation, no one knows what's going to happen when that guy is angry. Then we'll all be in trouble. The demigod said, no, don't worry. We'll give you protection. Then being persuaded by them in this way, Kamdev went and released his five arrows. Lord Shiva's meditation broke. He became perturbed. He became angry. Who broke my meditation? And then he saw Kamdev. As his angry glance fell at him, he was burnt to ashes. His body was lost. Therefore, another name of Kamdev is Ananga, the one without a body, Anga. So Kamdev was burnt to ashes. Now this Kamdev then entered into Krishna's body. And then he came out as Krishna's son, Pradyumna. So Vasudev, Shankarshan, Pradyumna, Aniruddha, although they are Vishnu Tattvas originally, but in the past times, some entities also took shelter of them or merged into them, merged into their personalities. So Kamdev actually became Pradyumna. And Pradyumna's son is Aniruddha. Lord Brahma actually became Aniruddha. So there was a demon called Sambarasura. So Sambara was told by Narad Muni that Krishna's son, Pradyumna, will kill him. So demons, as Kamsa did, try to prevent their death by getting rid of the personalities, those who are supposed to kill them. So Sambarasura, when he got the news that Krishna's son Pradyumna is born, then he went there in the maternity home. Generally, for 10 to 13 days, I think they stayed after the childbirth, they stay in the maternity home. It's a special area where the mother and the baby stay. So when they were in that, when Rukmini gave birth to the son, they were in that maternity area, and Sambarasura appeared in the guise of a beautiful woman. She stole this baby, Pradyumna. And he flew away into the sky and dropped the baby into the ocean. He thought that in this way he would kill the baby. But a fish, huge fish actually, swallowed that baby. That fish was caught by a fisherman. And that fish was offered to the king. And who happened to be the king of that place? Sambarasura himself. Sambara. So, the fish was taken to the kitchen. When the cook was cutting the fish, he found a live baby in the belly of the fish. So he offered this child to another girl there who was assisting in the kitchen. Her name was Mayavati. This Mayavati is actually Kamdev's wife. Kamdev's wife is Rati. Rati appeared as Mayavati. So Mayavati, when she got the baby, she could recognize that this is her husband, appeared again. His appearance was exactly like Krishna's. And so then Mayavati knew that this person is going to kill Sambarasura. And within a very short time, this little boy grew up to be a fully matured young man. And Mayavati told him about his mission, that he has come to kill Sambarasura. So she taught him a mantra called Mahavidya, because she knew that Sambarasura has great mystic power. So this was the only way the mystic power could have been counteracted. So being instructed in that way, Pradyumna then went to Sambarasura and challenged him. Sambarasura was sitting on his throne in the assembly, and he went and he started to insult him. And as a result of that, Sambarasura became very, very upset. He took his club and he attacked Pradyumna. Pradyumna also took a club and counteracted his attack. And in this way they fought for a long time. Sambarasura started to create all his mystic influences. But with the Mahavidya mantra, he counteracted those mystic influences casted by Sambarasura. And then finally with his sword, he chopped his head off. Then Mayavati flew with Pradyumna to Dwarka. They arrived in the inner chamber of Krishna's queen's apartments. And so the queens, when they saw Pradyumna, they thought Krishna came. But soon after that they realized that this was not Krishna. But Rukmini, when she saw this boy, milk naturally started to flow from her breast. And she felt that this must be my son, lost son. And in the meantime, Krishna came with his parents. And Krishna also expressed his surprise that who is this personality who looks exactly like me? And at that time, Narad Muni also appeared, and Narad Muni disclosed the whole incident, what actually happened. That how the son that was stolen before 10 days, within 10 days of his birth, what actually happened, how Sambarasura tried to drown him in the ocean, but how he was rescued, and how he killed Sambarasura, and now he has come. So this is how Pradyumna and Mayavati, who is his wife from the previous birth, Kamdev and Rati, became united again as Pradyumna and Mayavati. So today I just stop here and invite questions, because in the morning I noticed there were quite a few questions. Okay, so does anybody have any question? Yes. Fifteen years. Krishna has just reached his youth. It's a junction of his adolescence and youth. 15 going on 16. Oh, that is the most. Yeah, Krishna left Vrindavan at that time. And then it was, the time-wise, I don't exactly remember. But 17 times Jarasandha attacked, so must have taken some time. So then before he transferred. To gather the army, he took some time. Yes, you had a question?
You were describing how Rukmini was trying to discourage his family members, making comparing Krishna with all ones. He's a cowherd boy, he's black, and like that. So all the scriptural references mention Krishna's black, and then in Dwarka. Then how do we understand that sometimes Krishna is in a white complexion in some different parts of the world, we worship him like that?
Prabhupada pointed out that Krishna is neither white nor black. Krishna's complexion is transcendental. It cannot be compared to any material color. But we can go into the closeness. Can be sometimes Krishna's complexion has been compared to the monsoon cloud, which is not quite black as such. At the same time, Krishna's complexion also has sometimes been compared to a flower called Aparajita, which is extremely blue, very blue. So that is Krishna's complexion. Since it's not material, it cannot be defined by any material description. All we can do is get the closest to it, resembling. Yes.
What system exists in the Varnashram, like you morning?
Yes. Okay. You see, whatever is there in the material nature, since material nature is a reflection of the spiritual nature, whatever is there in the reflection must be there in the real thing. Yeah. Golok Vrindavan, there is this Varnashram system also. Like Madhumangal is a Brahman, right? Kamsa is a Kshatriya, right? Arjun is a Kshatriya. Krishna's father, Devaki, Vasudeva, is a Kshatriya. And Nanda Maharaj and others are Vaishyas. And they have their servants, their Sudras. So four divisions are always there in the perfect human society. And Prabhupada is saying, not only perfect human society, in every human society, you go to the jungles in the and see the aborigines. In their community also there are intellectuals or what is it called? That voodoo witch doctors. And you have the warriors, the fighters, you have the traders, and you have workers. So this society, these divisions are existing everywhere. Sometimes we artificially may not want to accept that. But that is a different issue. But normally, like when Prabhupada went to Russia, he was talking to the great Indologist there, Professor Kotovsky. Prabhupada was talking about Varnashram, and Prabhupada told him that, look, although you're trying to create a classless society, but these four classes are there in your society also. You have your intellectuals, you have your administrators. The only persons that you do not allow are the traders. But I have seen that they are black marketeers. You do not allow them to become the traders, but they are illegal way they are doing their business. Trading. And what you are trying to make is a Sudra society of workers, trying to get rid of all the higher four upper classes, a society of workers. Yes.
Maharaj, thank you very much. I've heard Srila Prabhupada say a few times that all the pastimes performed by Krishna from the time he left Vrindavan were actually performed by an expansion of Krishna, Vasudeva expansion. So what is the significance of that? What is the significance of that?
Yeah, you see, the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, he never leaves Vrindavan. Vrindavanam parityajya kutra kadapi na gacchati. Leaving Vrindavan, he never goes anywhere. That is Krishna. That's the Nanda Nandan Krishna. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur is making that point. Aradha Bhagavan Brajesho Tanay Staddhama Vrindavanam. The Supreme Worshipable Lord is the son of Nanda Maharaj. Krishna Anna Jadu Sambhuta. The Krishna who appeared in the Jadu dynasty, the Vasudev Krishna, is different from Nanda Nandan Krishna, is pointing out. So this Krishna, original Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, he never leaves Vrindavan and doesn't even take a step out of Vrindavan. And this point has been established by the Goswami, especially Jiva Goswami, that when Akrura was taking Krishna to Mathura from Vrindavan, on Jamuna, Akrura went to take bath. And in Jamuna, when he was taking bath, he saw Krishna and Balaram also in Jamuna. So he was surprised because he was thinking that Krishna Balaram is sitting on the chariot. So he came out of the water to see, and he saw Krishna Balaram is sitting on the chariot. And then when he came back, he saw again, this time he saw Krishna as Mahavishnu and Balaram as Ananta Shesh. And so then he went back, and when he went back, after taking his bath, Krishna asked, it seems that you have seen something very wonderful. So he said, yes, whoever has seen you has seen the most wonderful things. So at that time, it is said that Krishna, the Nanda Nandan Krishna, Brajendra Nandan Krishna, from that point, border of Vrindavan, and went back to Vrindavan. And Vasudev Krishna, the son of Vasudev and Devaki, came and sat on the chariot. So that Krishna, Vasudev Krishna, was taken by Akrura to Mathura. And Vrindavan Krishna went back to Vrindavan. Thank you. Hari Bhavan. Yes? No. They go to Vaikuntha. The only time one has access to Golok Vrindavan is in this particular Chaturyuga when Krishna performs his pastimes. Then different types of sadhakas have an access to Vrindavan. For example, the gopis, like in the individuals, the sadhu, the sages who became attracted to Lord Ramchandra in Dandakaranya, they were elevated to Vrindavan. The personified Vedas, the 108 Upanishads personified, they had access to Vrindavan when Krishna came in this particular Dwapar Yuga. Right? And then those girls who became attracted to Ramchandra when he broke the bow to win Sita in Mithila, they got, so these are the different types of gopis. Shrutichari gopis, Rithichari gopi, Maithili gopis, and so forth. Right? Okay. This is another one way of entering into Vrindavan. Because those who became qualified in this way got a chance to enter into Krishna's pastimes when he came and revealed his Vrindavan pastimes. They got. And the other way is when after performing his pastimes, Krishna comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then those who follow him, they get an access to Vrindavan. Can you imagine how fortunate we are? Yes?
Maharaj, the explanation that you just gave to Prabhupada, this question about Krishna never leaving Vrindavan, and Vasudev Krishna is the one who was out of Vrindavan, so is it correct to see Krishna with a flute since he's not Nanda Nandana in Dwarka? Is it correct to see Krishna with flute, playing flute in Dwarka?
Playing flute in Dwarka?
Yeah, since he's not Nanda Nandana Krishna, he's Vasudev.
No, as I said, like that Nanda Nandana Krishna never leaves Vrindavan.
Right.
But in Dwarka, he doesn't play flute.
He doesn't play flute.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, right. That's the thing.
So when we see in our temples, it's because Prabhupada wants us to go, actually, he allows us to see it in that way just so we can be trained to go like a Vrindavan, although it's like Dwarkadish, for example.
Yeah. Yeah, you see, Krishna, when he is worshipped in the temple, that is Krishna's Vaikuntha aspect. Krishna of Vrindavan is not worshipped in Vaidhi Bhakti. Krishna in Vrindavan is worshipped in Raganuga Bhakti. Right? That is a different types of worship. So, you see, this worship of Krishna in the temples is in the Vaikuntha mood. So this Krishna is actually the one who is worshipped in the temple. He is Lakshmi Narayan aspect of Krishna. All the personalities are there with Krishna. So Lakshmi Narayan is also with Krishna, in Krishna. So that aspect is being worshipped.
So is it correct for us to have Rukmini Dwarkadish with Dwarkadish for the flute? Because Dwarkadish has a flute. So is that correct or is that incorrect? Or?
Well, Prabhupada established, so how can it not be correct? Yeah, sure. The thing is, to begin with, you see, Prabhupada is actually making that point. Who is Rukmini? We may call them Rukmini Dwarkadish, but originally Rukmini is Radharani. Now somebody may say, no, Rukmini is Satyabhama. I'm sorry, Rukmini is Chandravali. Rukmini is Chandravali, Radharani is Satyabhama. But the thing is, Chandravali is again is an expansion of Srimati Radharani. So ultimately, it's all Radharani. So even to worship as Rukmini Dwarkadish, we are actually, in our eyes, they are Radha Krishna. But in particular situation, they may appear to be Rukmini Dwarkadish, but actually they are Radha Krishna. That is what Prabhupada established. We have to understand that Prabhupada's arrangement is perfect. He is a pure devotee. He is not seeing with mundane things, mundane eyes or mundane calculation. His perception is, he is seeing Krishna face to face, and that's what he established.
This is a little bit general. It's not
yeah, sure.
Okay, so I read in the Nectar Devotion that Prabhupada said, a Nichasiddha devotee doesn't fall down. So, in saying... I read in the Nectar Devotion that Prabhupada said, a Nichasiddha devotee does not fall down. Does that mean that it's highly unlikely that it'll fall down? Or that it's totally impossible that it'll fall down?
Yeah, a Nityasiddha devotee never falls down.
Okay.
But by Krishna's arrangement, a Nityasiddha devotee may come to this material nature. But that's not his fall down.
So are there two categories of jivas then? Because in other words, like in the spiritual world, is all the jivas are Nityasiddha or no?
But as I said, like by Krishna's arrangement, they may come down. So, see,
But when they come down, they're liberated. Correct?
See,
or
I'll give you an example. You see, that is, they are under the influence of Yogamaya. Right? Say, for example, Arjun comes with Krishna. Arjun is situated in the spiritual sky. So when Arjun comes down, it is not that Arjun fell down and came. Because Krishna wanted him to come, that's why he came. And sometimes, you know, like to elevate a devotee into a higher situation, Krishna may make him come down. Like say, for example, from Vaikuntha there is no access to Vrindavan. From Vaikuntha he cannot go to Vrindavan, spiritual Vaikuntha. The only way to go to Vrindavan from Vaikuntha is to come down to the earth planet, which has been described in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Gop Kumar's journey. Came back to the earth planet, performed Sankirtan on the earth planet, Vrindavan, and then he became qualified or eligible to go to Vrindavan, enter into Vrindavan. So sometimes, in order to take a living entity from Vaikuntha to Vrindavan, Krishna may arrange that he'll come to the earth planet and go through the proper process and go to Vrindavan. So Krishna can make that arrangement. For example, Jai Vijay. They were in Vaikuntha. They fell down. And this is another thing. Like this arrangement sometimes takes place in the form of a curse of a brahmana, right? So they are cursed, but ultimately it's Krishna's arrangement, right? And then, see, three times they came. Fourth time when they came, they Jagai and Madhai entered into Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. And where are they elevated? They are elevated to Golok Navadvip. And Golok Vrindavan. So consider from gatekeeper as from the gateway of Vaikuntha to elevation to Golok Vrindavan. So we have to understand it's Krishna's arrangement.
The vast majority of this jivas who are in the material world in this universe or in other universes, are they in that category? Or are they...
In Krishna's arrangement, everything is possible. We cannot judge. Like, I mean, if you consider the whether all the living entities were Nitya Siddhas and came down, it's difficult to ascertain.
So in other words, not every jiva in the spiritual world is Nitya Siddha. Or are they?
Jiva Tattva is Jiva Tattva, Tatastha Shakti, marginal potency. But they say, so, at least Prabhupada said that we all are fortunate enough to receive Mahaprabhu's mercy. Where we came from doesn't matter. But wherever we are, from this point we can receive Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy and be elevated to the topmost region of the spiritual sky. Yes.
Hare Krishna. Thank you Maharaj for the most illustrious class, very inspiring. I was just thinking that developing this taste for hearing the holy name and Krishna's pastime will can really lead us to success fast. So one question I wanted to ask is, what is the meaning of developing taste? What is that taste? Because in my conditioned state, I don't understand what is that taste and how to develop that taste.
Taste means spontaneous liking. Right? Without effort, when we appreciate something, that is the taste. Right? Without an effort, you know, that appreciation takes place. Like, it's not that somebody has to tell you, look, this is sweet, this is how the taste is, and, right? No, you taste it, and you become so attracted, that in spite of having diabetes, you just want to have it. So that is the taste. Spontaneously you become attracted to it, to relish it more and more. Yes, Dwarkadish.
Hare Krishna. So if Nandanandana never left Vrindavan, then how come Gopi always stays in the mood of a separation?
Yes, good point. The question is, if Nandanandan Krishna never left Vrindavan, then why are the gopis always in the mood of separation? That is Krishna's Jogamaya. The gopis, when they are seeing Krishna, they are thinking they are dreaming. And in a dream, when they are seeing Krishna, they are thinking Krishna has come to them. So this is, like Krishna is there, they are dealing with them. Garga Samhita actually describes that Krishna gave the assurance to the gopis that I'll come to you every day. But when Krishna comes to them, they think that they are dreaming.
Then it raises another question that Krishna sent Uddhava to go to Vrindavan and see the separation, the how gopis were in the mode of separation, to learn from, and then Uddhava said, I would like to stay in as a creeper in Vrindavan, to, so he can have a dust of the gopis, you know, on his head. So,
yeah. So what's the question?
So the question is, they will, Krishna sent Uddhava to vanish the mood of separation from gopis.
Yeah, so that's the mood of separation. So in order to experience the mood of separation, you have to feel that separation. Right? So that mood of separation is created by Krishna's Jogamaya. Although Krishna is there with them, they are thinking, oh, Krishna is not there. Krishna didn't come for so long. And that is because love in separation is more intense than in union. Therefore, in order to make them experience that intense love, Krishna is creating this situation, sort of, where they're thinking that they're separated from Krishna. Yes, Chaitanya. Yeah, please.
In reference to Dwarkadisha's question about the separation, if I remember correctly, there was a pastime when Srimati Radharani and Lord Krishna are discussing certain aspects of separation. At a point, Radharani comes bewildered and thinks, well, Krishna's not here, and he's right in front of her. If I remember, there's a...
Krishna is?
Right there with Radharani, but for some reason, she doesn't is not aware of it for a moment, and that separation comes into play. If I remember, that's correct.
Yeah. Yeah, all... Like... You see, this is the meaning of Jogamaya, that Krishna makes arrangement in such a way that everybody thinks that that is what it is. That's why Krishna is described often as Jogeshwara, the Lord of the mystics. So he creates all kinds of illusion. Yes. Take the mic.
We say Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself. How do we understand that?
How do we understand that
Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself, and Lord Chaitanya appeared in Advaita and he traveled all over the place. And we say Navrajendra Nandan ye Sachi Suta Hoilo say.
Yeah.
So which Krishna is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu?
So Krishna is original Supreme Personality of Godhead. He has another aspect, that is Krishna Chaitanya. Golok has two chambers. In one chamber, Krishna is enjoying the loving exchange with his devotees. And in the other chamber, Navadvip, the same Krishna as Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is distributing that love to others. Same Krishna in two aspects. The difference is, in Vrindavan, Krishna and Radha are two, separate. Energy and energetic have become separated. But in Navadvip, the energetic and energy have become one. Radha and Krishna became one, and that is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Same personality. Yes, there is a question at the back.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for wonderful class. We know like Jay and Vijay were cursed for three births, but now you explain like in this Kali Yuga also they came as Jagai and Madai. So how do you understand that?
Because the fourth incarnation of the Lord in the fourth Yuga, Kali Yuga, is kept as a hidden. Is not declared, not disclosed. So since his pastimes has not been disclosed, Jagai Madai's appearance also has been kept as a secret. Yes, last question.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, in Dasya. Yeah, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is served in Dasya. Actually, even, were you there in the morning? Oh, you're listening at home. So there I discussed about the three unusual mellows with the Supreme Personality of Godhead is available only in Vrindavan. Right? In service, in friendship, parental, and conjugal. And